Good morning. It's Thursday, and welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we hope you can also call in. And we have the old phone number. If you've been following our pledge drive situation, you know that we have a new number for pledge drives. We also have a whole bunch of new numbers for other things around the station. We transitioned to one of these super-duper high-tech internet-actuated telephone systems. But we still remain here for Perspectives. 414-1234, the local number. And we still have 800-926-8809 for the long-distance connection to the program. Our email, perspectives@wfsu.org. And if you want to send us a tweet, yay, at WFSU Perspective is the way that you can do that. We've been talking so much on this program for the past several years about different community resources we have to address specific kinds of problems. And maybe one of the more, I guess, prominent or public problems that we have, you can see on virtually any street corner right now. One of the places that I pass on the way to and from work every single day is right smack dab in the middle of downtown Tallahassee. It is at the corner of Magnolia and Apalachee Parkway, and invariably there is a gentleman out there with a "We'll work for food" sign. And you see that at many different corners around town, and you think, oh, maybe you throw him a buck or two or five or whatever. And that, for so many of us, has perennially been the face of homelessness. 2 weeks ago, my wife and I were headed up Thomasville Road, and we got to the flyover. And there is a Shell station that is right underneath that flyover, and we stopped in there to grab my wife needed a snack, or Tommy was a little bit upset. And as I got out of the car, back behind me in the parking lot was a young gentleman, probably in his mid-20s. His wife, very attractive, blonde gal, wearing nice, not ostentatious clothes. They had the sweetest little girl, probably about 3 years old, I had ever seen. And they were panhandling on the corner. And it just suddenly struck me that is also the face of homelessness, and perhaps to a larger degree now than it has been in the past. And that's what we're going to talk about here on Perspectives, with your kindly permission and cooperation here this morning. Let me introduce the panel we have. Let's start off with Kim Galban, Countryman. She is Big Bend Homeless Coalition. Now you are, let me see, second in command, or how is that, Kim? Now with the departure of Susan Porcio, who's leaving tomorrow. That's right. Her last day, right?
Yeah, I'm the assistant director, and we have an interim executive director.
Okay, but you are the face of the Big Bend Homeless Coalition for today,
yes,
for our
I
purposes
am.
Today. Thank you so much for coming in. We
Thanks.
Appreciate it. Also with us is Allison Feinberg from the Leon County Schools. And what's your exact title, Allison, over there?
I'm the project coordinator for Leon County Schools Homeless Education Program.
Okay. How many folks in your particular unit? Are you the person, or do you
I'm the person.
Wow. I'm glad we got you then and not someone else. And you, Kevin Priest joins us, too, from Capital City Youth Services. Kevin, thanks. Welcome. And what exactly does your organization do? Talk about
we
that.
We are working with a lot of different youth right now. They're coming to an organization. We primarily for homeless youth, we have our Going Places Street Outreach. We have a drop-in center. We also have a transitional living program that is a little bit more longer term for housing for those youth as well.
Okay. How many clients do you have with the organization now?
Oh, gosh. Between our emergency shelter, all of our counseling services, transitional living. I mean, right now we're probably close to 100 kids that we're serving at this point in time.
Wow. And Allison, for the Leon County School District, we talked before we got started here, sometimes it's almost an underground situation. You don't know the kids are homeless, but how many do you know in the district who are homeless?
Last year, we ended at 703, and this year, we're already at 770 at identifying them. So we're probably still under-identifying a little bit, but you know, the more that we are able to educate the people about how to identify them in the schools and showing the families that we're here to help and support, the more that number will grow, I think.
Wow. And Kim, of course, the Big Bend Homeless Coalition has the thermometer every year that you come out. And this is a moving target because people go in and out of homelessness all the time. But what are the current stats that you got?
This year's point in time count, we surveyed 770 folks, and of those, 13% were children, which came out to 103. So the best practice is to multiply that by three. But as you can – from what we hear from Allison, that's way underestimated, right, our numbers. I mean, and, you know, Kevin has 100. We have 80. So it's tragic thinking where the rest of them are.
Oh, my gosh. Because we still keep thinking of, in many instances, you know, under the bridge and back in the woods or sofa surfing with friends and relatives. In fact, you grew up in a situation that was kind of like that. You had interesting sort of semi-siblings coming and going all the time, didn't you?
Yes. I never understood what was going on. But yes, we always had children in our home that my mom was known for adopting kids. It wasn't until I was an adult that I realized that these were children who were homeless. They would come to our house. They always had the same clothes on, and my mother would feed them. They usually, you know, were like, you know, for us, they were dirty. They didn't look like they had been bathed. And my mom let them live with us. There were night after night where we would have certain people. One was named Patty. I'll never forget her. And she was in our house for, you know, weeks at a time.
And just sort of, you know, showed up and, hi, I'm here.
Yeah. We never understood where they came from, but it was all of a sudden we had kids in the house. So, yeah.
Yeah, not exactly the way the Department of Children and Families handles adoptions, but, you know.
Probably not.
Yeah, or fostering or anything else. The stories that you get back from the kids, though, Allison, what happens? Are there certain, I guess, classifications of here's why a child suddenly becomes homeless or is born into homelessness?
Yeah, sometimes they're born into it. A lot of times they're going in and out of it. So, you know, they're able to get just the right amount enough money to move into stable housing, and then something happens and they lose it again. And so our goal is to train and educate all the staff and administration and teachers that are working with these students to be able to help identify them. A lot of times the indicators will be attendance, or they're a lot of them, 70% are around 70% are doubled up, so they're living with another family. And those are the ones that are hard to identify, point in time count and stuff, because it doesn't necessarily follow the HUD definition of what homelessness is, right, but it does for the McKinney-Vento Act, which is the law that's in place for the school systems to follow. So we have a form that they fill out, and our goal is to eliminate all barriers that these children receive or have towards them because of the living situation. So they are... Our goal is to keep them in the same school through the entire year, regardless of what school zone they're moving to due to housing, and to help them become, still have educational success and the same opportunities as any other student in our school system, regardless of what they're going home to every night.
Wow. Well, Kevin Priest, as Allison was saying, part of the whole process is to give as much, I guess, predictability or stability to a kid's life as you can. Because the alternative can lead to all kinds of bad stuff. How do you do that in a situation where the kids are in and out of homelessness and their situations are so much in flux?
Well, the biggest thing for us is to make sure we're taking them where they are. We're not trying to turn them into something that, you know, we understand what they're dealing with. And ultimately, it's to just get them a notch or two better or going in a positive direction. And ultimately, that's what we were trying to achieve. Whether it's through our street outreach program, our Going Places street outreach program, our emergency shelter, our transitional living program, we're providing the services that the kids and the family need at that point in time. Oftentimes, we have parents who'll come and drop their kids off our emergency shelter because they're staying at the Hope Community or someplace like that, and they don't want their teens with them at that point in time. So we're providing – we're looking to work as partners with our other folks in the community and provide those services at the same time.
Okay. Well, this is a good point of departure here. Kim, if we can talk about with the opening now of the new Unified Services Complex, which is right across the street from the Hope Community there, and the closing of the old shelter downtown. How does this all fall together? Because that I think a lot of folks are still under the impression that, you know, the shelter at the old Tommy's nightclub downtown is still operational, but everything has moved now out on Pensacola Street.
The client, they haven't moved everything yet. They're moving over sometime before the end of the month, I believe. They'll do a staggered move in of the clients. We're working closely with them. They're great partners. They will continue to serve single men and single women and will direct all of the families to us. At the same time, the CESC will have a variety of services being offered. All the community members will come and will be able to have space there. So if we needed to, we could take one of our clients over there to talk to, you know, the medical services, et cetera. We do very specific case management where we are at Hope Community. So we, you know, our children, you know, our families will go directly to ELC. We get them hooked up with childcare. We go to Allison to schedule things and coordinate things with the school system. But if there is a service that maybe we are having a hard time accessing, we can always go next door.
Okay. And Allison, that brings us to when you become aware in the Leon School District that, oh, here is a kid who has just entered the system and this child is homeless. What happens then?
We immediately do transportation. So a school bus is either going to CCYS or to Hope Community to pick them up and take them to school and bring them home each day. And we make sure that they're receiving all the services that a Title I student, so a student that is in a Title I school, which is 70% or above on free or reduced lunch, so they receive all those services regardless of what school they're in. So say they're living, you know, the Sable Palm is the elementary school for Hope. Well, say they're coming from Chairs Elementary, which is on the other side of town, we're going to try to keep them in the school of origin. So even though they're living now in the Sable Palm zone, we're going to keep them at Chairs to keep their life, you know, consistent and not changing.
So. Okay, so it falls outside then the regular district dividing lines then. That, of course, depending on what the legislature is doing, that was something that had come up during this session too, the ability perhaps for students to attend any school that they wanted in any county. And we'll see what happens with that. We'll check back in on that on a program called Capital Report later on this evening, and we'll see what the outcome of that particular piece of legislation was. Do you have any experiences related to homeless kids? You'd like to share them? Here's how you do that. Give us a call, 414-1234, local number. It's 800-926-8809. If it's long distance, perspectives@wfsu.org. We're talking with Kim Galburn, countryman of the Big Bend Homeless Coalition, Kevin Priest of Capital City Youth Services, and Allison Feinberg with Leon County Schools. We'll be right back. Growing young face of homelessness, what we're talking about here on Perspectives on WFSU-FM. 414-1234, the local number in the greater Tallahassee Metro, 800-926-8809. If you're out in the hinterlands, and perspectives@wfsu.org is the email if you prefer communicating with us that way. I wanted to talk about some of the, again, the causes behind this, because there's been so much talk and it's turned into a political debate and all this kind of thing. What is the cause of homelessness? And we hear everything from, oh, it's just people being lazy and they don't want to work, or this is a lifestyle choice or whatever, to, oh, that we're all one paycheck away from homelessness. And Kim Galvin, countryman, if I can ask you, just what are some of the root causes?
Most of our families, we're here, it's, you know, there's kind of this trend. We're hearing similar stories. It was one big thing that happened. We have one client who had a preemie. And she had to quit her job. She was a single mom, had to quit her job to stay at the hospital with her baby because she didn't want to leave. And that, you know, couldn't pay her bills and ended up homeless and ended up with us. We had another woman who moved here from Oregon, went online with Zillow.com, rented a place, sent them the deposit, first month's rent, got to Florida to find out that it was a scam. Someone had taken her money. And she is living with us now. She was going from rest area to rest area to sleep somewhere where it was safe. And we also have a client who was an EMT for 20 years, diagnosed with cancer, and her medical bills sent her into a financial crisis that led her into homelessness and living with us.
My gosh, well, that is one of the – I've heard that. Kevin, have you heard that too? That, medical expenses are the biggest single source of bankruptcy in this country?
Absolutely. And honestly, it is one of those situations where it is usually one big thing that occurs. And no family is ever – they're not prepared for it. Especially for kids, they don't understand it. Parents are trying to do the best they can to provide for the entire family. And they're right on the verge. And that's what a lot of people don't understand. They really need to pay attention to how people are working paycheck to paycheck.
Allison, are there any different ways that kids who are in the Leon School District who are homeless interact with teachers and peers and all that kind of thing? Because kids are resilient, but they can also be cruel. And so much of our society is based on, I live in a house or I live in an apartment and isn't this cool? And it's expected. This is how the world is. And then you have a kid who doesn't have that experience.
Right. I do feel that there are some that it negatively affects. But a lot of times these kids, they go home and it's like makes you want to help them even more because it's not affecting them wanting to succeed in school. And so that's where it's like it's so motivating to want to continue to do whatever it takes to help these kids, because even though that they're having all these hardships and they're seeing, what their parents or their guardians are experiencing at night, they still want to go to school. They still want to be successful. And that's kind of driving them to want to be more than what they're experiencing at the time. And so, it does cause issues here and there, but over the general homeless population in our school system, I feel like they're just like any other student. And you would see them sitting in class and you would never know. And so, and I think the more we're able to educate the kids that are in our schools about homelessness too, that's another group we could reach out to better probably to make people more sensitive of the subject and understanding that, what you might go home to is not what your neighbor is going home to. And so, yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Kim. Oh,
that was Allison.
yeah. But you were just so into the conversation. I thought, boy.
Because I think about the kids we have on campus. We do have, over 80 of them right now. And I was listening to Allison and thinking of a mom who had a group of about 10 kids in our emergency shelter helping them do their homework. And one of the little girls ran up to me to show me her grades and, how she was doing. And it turns out she's in gifted. I mean, she's right. Allison's right. These are normal kids. I mean, they're just like everyone else's. They're just stuck in a really bad situation.
It was like what I heard from some of the folks who work with the Guardian Ad Litem program when they're dealing with foster kids. And most of those children do not want to, look at Johnny. He's a foster. Oh, isn't that, I'm a kid. Darn it.
Right.
I'm just the same as any other kid. So back off with this trying to, pigeonhole. Let's go to the phone. So Reed's hanging on right now. Hey, Reed.
Hey, Tom. How are you today?
Hey, we're doing real fine, sir. How you doing? Hey, how was the gig the other weekend?
Oh, it was wonderful. It was a great time. Tallahassee Music Week was a wonderful success, and thank you for plugging it.
Oh, our pleasure. Go ahead.
And thank you for your show today. I tell you, Tom, my next call is going to be to renew my membership, and one of the big reasons is perspective. But moving on, we talk a lot about the homeless in stereotypes. But what I haven't heard this morning is a discussion in the panel about families who are still working, many of them full-time, and yet still can't find adequate housing.
Boy, that is and that is the essence of the whole problem. If you have a home, you are by definition not homeless. Let's go around the table here. Let's start with you, Kevin Priest. What do you think?
Yeah, he's absolutely right. It's one of those situations where it's not paid attention to enough. It's one of those, people are living on the verge of homelessness every day. And it's a matter of making their rent, making sure they have enough food to eat, making sure they can pay for utilities, they can have gas in the car, all these different expenses that everybody else pays. and they are able to keep up with. Certain people are right on that verge of not being able to keep up with it.
Okay. Your thoughts, Allison?
Adequate housing is a huge gap. I feel like it's something that our community is definitely working on bettering, but it's an area where, I mean, I know HOPE and CCYS, they're all of the clients that are living there, they're pushing to help them get jobs and they're connecting them with people so they can get stable, you know, employment. But there's still that gap of where they can, once they get the employment and they have the money, rapid rehousing and programs like this, there's, you know, a slight gap for helping them like that transitional period. So.
Go ahead, Kim.
Well, I'd love to invite people in the community to come on out in the middle of the day to HOPE Community and see what goes on there, because it's empty. Because all of the families, the parents are all at work and the children are all at school, except for people who have just shown up at the emergency shelter. We, of course, there are going to be some adults who are still there because they're working the night shift. Or, like one client, they're too ill to work. But those are only a few of them. They're all going to work. We have clients who come in off the street and ask us for bus passes so they can go to work. We have some that are there every morning waiting, you know, because they still haven't got their monthly bus pass. They're just waiting on that to get approved. So, no, they work. They have jobs. And every once in a while, one of them will get a promotion and be like, oh, my gosh, I can move out next week. But it's the affordable housing. It's the lack of affordable housing. You know, when we have apartments in town that are, you know, average price $700-$800 a month, and you're working minimum wage, how are you supposed to live with that?
Well, there's been a lot of discussion on that with the ever escalating pressure on rental housing prices, because we have the developments like down around College Town and out on West Tennessee Street, which are high end luxury student and young professional type apartments. Meanwhile, you have now in some of the other areas of town complexes that are almost empty now, because they, and yet you can't price them affordably for the just homeless population that you're looking for right now.
Well, Tom, I'd like to mention the fact that one of the things going on right now is we're looking at houses outside of the area of Tallahassee that are becoming vacant. And there's talk about being able to develop those for homeless occupation. And the issue there is, okay, that's fine, but what about transportation? What about getting back into town so these people can get to work, so they can get to their doctor's appointments, things of that nature? There needs to be more of a focus on public transportation and making that more of a means for people to actually be able to get that access to Tallahassee and be able to utilize that.
Yeah, and is there a danger of creating like a post-homeless ghetto?
Right.
You know, here are people who lost their houses. Now we're all going to stick them in this little complex here. And then, I don't know. Because we're talking mainstream. I mean, people who just want to live normal lives and be back in society.
Right.
And just like the rest of us, some of them want to live in specific areas of town because of the schools.
Sure.
I mean, they, you know, they care where their kids go to school.
Or jobs.
Well. Or jobs.
Or jobs.
Exactly.
Sure. Let's go to the phones where Cheryl awaits. Hi, Cheryl. Welcome to Perspectives.
Thanks. I wanted, first of all, to thank everyone for their incredibly important work, particularly homeless children. They're so vulnerable. And I also wanted to make sure that anyone listening knows that every school district in Florida, in fact, every school district in the nation, has a homeless liaison. And that person can be a really important contact. But I wanted to invite your guests to just talk a little bit about the signs of homelessness, because children and adults do sometimes hide that. And there's lots of us who interact every day with children and families who, if we had some ideas about the signs, might be able to link people up with some services.
Oh, terrific, Cheryl. Yeah, we'll do a round robin on that one. Let's start with you, Kevin.
Well, you know, sometimes it's hard to tell, because children, just like adults, have their own pride that they're trying to maintain. And so they're not going to necessarily outwardly come out and say, I'm homeless. But, you know, they'll come out in certain word, you know, they'll say, "I'm, you know, do you have anything extra to eat? I'd like to get something to eat. You know, anything to drink? Do you have a place I can just hang out for a little bit?" You know, so it's just paying attention to those small little things like that that can give you keys to what's going on with them.
Okay. Allison? Yeah, since you've got props here for being the liaison. So.
Yes. I feel like one of the biggest indicators is attendance. because a lot of times they move from where a bus is normally stopping and picking up and dropping off, and they're no longer living in the school zone, so they're frequently having, you know, absences that are accumulating, and that's a big indicator that they might be experiencing a homeless situation or they're living within transition. And so that would be where we would definitely step in and offer our services. And I mean, the usual, you know, like they're coming in the same clothes or, you know, they have might have bad hygiene, not by choice, but because of the situation they're going to at home. And those are all things that could possibly be indicators of homelessness.
Yeah, we didn't have a free school lunch program. This was 10,000 years ago when I was in elementary school. But there was a brother and a sister who really matched that description. They would wear the same raggedy clothes day after day and some hygiene issues there. But the thing that stuck with me year after year is that the only thing they could afford for lunch was a can of sardines.
Yeah.
And to this day, when someone eats sardines and I smell, I think of those kids and wonder what happened to them and everything. Go ahead, Kim.
Well, you know, everything my colleagues here have said is fantastic. So I'm not going to touch on the children because they've done a great job on that. But I will say to the listener that when I was volunteering for the point in time count, I was asking people who are coming out of the library downtown, you know, if they were interested in filling out this survey. And one gentleman was extremely angry with me for assuming that he was homeless. He was dressed in a nice shirt and slacks. He's like, what about me would make you even think? I said, well, because we all look homeless. Every single one of us. There's no look. I said, I'm asking everyone. And his eyes just kind of opened like, oh, wow, I'm sorry. And then, you know, and he was kind of embarrassed. Because, yes, he was wearing a button-down shirt and slacks. Of course I'm going to ask you. How do I know you're not homeless? So, I mean, and that's what, you know, what I'd like to share is, you know, when it comes to the adults, it's the same thing as what Kevin was saying. You have to listen. There are not always going to be outward signs. They are not all holding signs and dressed terribly. Sometimes they're in their work clothes. Sometimes they're well kept. You have to listen to know who's homeless.
You're absolutely right. I volunteered at the downtown library for a while, and we know because that particular area soon will have had a proximity to the shelter. There would be lots of folks in there. And some of the folks I got to know were just – there was one gentleman, heavy-duty doctorate degree from up north. And the same thing had occurred with him that one of you had mentioned with a lady who was lured down here on false pretenses and was actually taken advantage of. Wound up in Tallahassee, didn't have the wherewithal to go anywhere, but at least he had, you know, the decent clothes on his back. Suit was a little bit worn, but otherwise you never would have known. And, you know, full professional, and he was in that library every night surfing the web and trying to find leads on jobs and, you know, a way to advance himself. But who would have known?
Exactly.
You really can't tell.
Right.
Now, Kevin, talk about some of the – at the outset, you had mentioned some of the specific services that Capital City Youth Services has there. But what is really needed more than anything else with the folks you work with?
Well, I mean, we're really focusing on trying to find these kids jobs. But I want to back up a little bit here because some things that are not talked about particularly is the population we serve. Particularly for our Going Places Street Outreach, is focusing on those kids that are 18 to 21. It's kind of the lost component, if you will, the population itself, that kids are aging out where they've gone through foster care or were adopted or whatever it may be. They reach the age of 18. They think they're prepared to be out on the streets. They're not, oftentimes. Even kids that had a, you know, home, they weren't taken out of their homes. They are falling in victim at the same time or reaching the age of 18 or looked upon as being the age of majority at that point as an adult. And they're finding it very hard to make it out there because of the lack of good jobs, ones that actually can pay the rent, ones for affordable housing, make sure they're meeting up with utilities and everything of that nature. So we try to provide them with some type of opportunity to be able to go out and find those jobs that they can maintain and at least come up with some semblance of revenue to help them prepare themselves.
That's got to be a huge struggle because wasn't there just a recent – and I'm trying to think, boy, the mind blanks here, but one of the biggest income disparity locations in the United States is Tallahassee, Florida.
Yes.
The gap between – the haves and the have-nots is much huger than I think any of us ever imagined. And so what do you find on that lower level when maybe you have some skill issues or academic preparation issues or anything else then, Kevin? What's out there for them?
Well, we have a few programs around town. Workforce development for is one for sure. But the big thing for our kids is to help them go further with their education. Because for jobs they're actually going to be able to get into, potentially, you know, for example, nursing, some of the nursing program from TCC, being able to get into jobs where they actually make some income that will allow them to not be homeless. And even with that being said, that's even marginal at best. They're not, you know, we're talking kids are just starting out. And a lot of these kids don't have the family backing necessarily income financially wise. It's just not there. So they need to be able to find themselves into a good groove and be able to go with it and still continue to build upon it.
Yeah. And how does the school district play into all this, Allison? If you have a kid that, okay, here's some aptitude. Boy, this child has shown, you know, an inclination and a desire to move forward. What can you do to help?
CCYS is amazing. They do the street outreach program. I've worked one-on-one with them with a couple situations, especially this year. And the unaccompanied homeless youth, those are the homeless children that do not have parents and they do not have a family and they're out alone. And they are probably some of the hardest to identify, and they're the ones that are going to be struggling the most to get out of the situation that they're in. And so having that collaboration with CCYS, I mean, they do a great job by, you know, they either bring the student to my attention because they found them on their own by being out there on the streets and working with them that way, or I'll bring them to, you know, I'll have a student that I'll find out, you know, was just kicked out of their home. They have nowhere to go. And that's when I call up CCYS and I'm like, hey, help me, you know, because a lot of these students are just, they're struggling to even find somewhere to go that night that I find out about them, so.
Homeless youth, what we're talking about on Perspectives, 414-1234, 800-926-8809. We'll be right back. Yeah, two words we shouldn't put together in the same sentence, homelessness and kids. But that's what we're talking about here on Perspectives today with our panel, Kim Galbrand, Countryman with the Big Bend Homeless Coalition, Kevin Priest with Capital City Youth Services, Allison Feinberg with Leon County Schools, and yourself, of course, at 414-1234, 800-926-8809. Before we go back to the phones, Kim, we were just saying off air that situation that Allison had referenced there. When a kid is kicked out, okay, that's it, you little, you're out of here, and boom, they hit the streets, and all bets are off at that point with that kid.
Right, and that's when they can engage in activities or behaviors that really put them at risk of sexual trafficking, drugs, abuse. It really ends up in a – that could spiral quickly, and we have a real problem with that with these kids.
Yeah, and you said that was right here in Tallahassee, Kevin. You see this.
Yeah, we've already witnessed it, unfortunately, in our emergency shelter, our Going Places Street Outreach. We've had kids come through our transition living program that we held on to that maybe not been sexually trafficked here, but they were in Florida, and they wanted to get them out of the area where they were at to get them away from their pimps and get into a safe zone. So we've already served girls particularly, and there are boys out there as well. They're a victim of the same thing. So we know for a fact that it's here, right here in Tallahassee.
Yeah, what kind of a triage can you bring in on that? I mean, this is emergency, all hands on deck. Save this kid.
Right, and it's a dilemma. It really is. It's about finding the right programs, because kids at that level come in at a lot of different variances. You might have kids who are just starting to engage in it. They're a lot easier to help at that point in time. Kids have been active in it for quite some time. They find it a way of life, and that it's what they're used to. And ultimately, they find themselves going right back to it.
And what happens if you do an intervention and you get this kid, well, really into school, when you have a child who has had those kinds of experiences and you put them in the classroom with kids who, I mean, this is a totally different planet there, Allison. That's got to be a, a shock. How do you deal with a kid like that?
I mean, making sure that they're getting the counseling that they need and they know that they're not in it alone. Like, there's tons of people in the community that are here in place to help them, and just letting them know that that's not the only route in life. Like, you, no matter what you've done, what you've gone through, there's always a chance to change. And so.
And in the few minutes we have left here, let's head back to the phones. Jack's waiting on line one. Hi, Jack. Thanks for calling. Welcome to Perspectives.
My pleasure. I just wanted to first thank your quality guests. This is a very, very important perspective. One of the realities is there's this intersection between need and criminal activity or juvenile criminal activity. And the good news is we are now moving forward in Florida to expunge records and to make it harder for law enforcement to keep records, especially of youth offenders. I know Kevin and his network is involved with this change. You know, we know that if a young person carries a record from childhood into adulthood, the likelihood they can get scholarships or housing or military or other kinds of opportunities is diminished. So we're making some progress, and if folks want to visit iamforkids.org, they can get some information about those expungement bills that are moving well in the legislature. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Jack. We appreciate the input on that. And in today's society, even with some of these initiatives, like the city of Tallahassee was talking about, Kevin, where, right, oh, okay, if you have a misdemeanor, then that shouldn't initially at least be a disqualifier for you as you seek employment. But this is still a really critical thing for kids, right? Even though you say, oh, juvenile records, it doesn't matter.
Well, and not only that, but I will say that the Department of Juvenile Justice has done a tremendous job of changing their focus, that they're going more towards prevention-based services. They're trying to keep kids from going deeper into that kind of – that verge of going into criminal activity. It's finding them at the start where they're maybe not – they're missing school. They're running away from home, things of that nature. It's clear signs that something's going on at the home base itself that may lead them to criminal activity. And DJJ itself has actually did a great promotion and trying to push a lot of services going that direction.
Before we go to line three here and Maria – we always talk in any situation about the possibility of people falling through the cracks. Do we still have cracks, guys?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty big cracks.
Yeah. What are they, and how do we shrink them?
Good question. You know, that's the difficulty. There is, okay, where is our emphasis going to be? Is it going to be on providing services just to keep, you know, we're going to house people who are homeless? Or are we going to actually try to get them out of homelessness? All right. And that's the big issue, is how – and that's going to take a lot more money, you know. And that's ultimately the big argument at this point. Will these people really take off if they got this opportunity? And generally, the people who are actually speaking that way have never experienced homelessness ever a day in their life.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Allison?
I definitely agree with him, and I think that a lot of it has to do with money, and a lot of it has to do with people not stereotyping these people. Like, there has to be some point in time when the community realizes what homelessness and living in transition really looks like, and that these are real people. And I feel like, you know, yeah, we have these sitting at the table right now that are very sensitive to these families and children, but is our community sensitive to it? Because I know that there has to be resources out there, but it's just making people realize the importance of this issue.
Yeah. What do you think, Kim?
I think there needs to be more funding for programs like rapid rehousing, where, you know, sometimes all it takes for a family is a deposit for their electricity, a deposit for their apartment, and first month's rent. And that's all they need to get themselves off the streets. The problem is we don't have enough funding for that right now. More families would be able to get out of homelessness if we were able to provide them with just that minimal amount of funding.
Maria's been patiently waiting on line three, and I think she has some direct input she can share here. Hi, Maria. Thanks for calling.
Why, thank you. Thanks for having me. I've been listening to the program, and this is really some great dialogue that we're having. However, we know that affordable housing is needed here in Tallahassee. As I travel around, I notice that houses are being built all over the place, condos, apartments. It's great. It's fascinating. But when you look at us, someone such as myself, and by the way, hi, Kim, this is Maria.
Oh, hey, Maria.
I'm here at the Hope Community, which was indeed a blessing for me and my son. And I don't know what we would have done, but now we're getting ready to move on. I went over and I took a look at the new shelter, and it's amazing. It's unbelievable. But I thought that, you know, maybe some of that money could have been directed to some affordable housing for women with children. Like right now, there are a lot of children here, and I just hope that, you know, the problem is solved. We need affordable housing here in Tallahassee.
Oh, Maria, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that. All the best to you and your son, and we're just so happy that you called. We really wish you well, okay?
Right, thank you very much.
Thanks, Maria.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Again, back to what we were talking about with the emphasis on building high-end rental housing in this community and the fact that a lot of – I'm thinking of our old neighborhood, excuse me, just a few blocks away from Astoria Park School on the northwest part of town, which used to be single-family, kind of middle-class homes. Most of the housing is now rental, had been student, and now is starting to revert to family. Like a first home family rental. And there's got to be a lot of properties out there that that could qualify maybe for lower income, whether it would take a subsidy or whatever. But there's a lot of for rent signs out there, a ton. But it's just what, not affordable?
Well, it's not affordable, but it goes back to the issue of, okay, is this in a neighborhood I want to live, number one? Is this a good school where my kid can go to? Is it close to work? If I don't have transportation, can I get transportation to where everything I need to get to? Those are the issues that always need to be answered. And for everybody, it's ultimately an individual decision at that point. And so it's difficult to just say in one word, you know, that you can actually fix this.
Yeah, that housing is obviously, though, a huge component of the need for folks. If they are homeless, put them in a house or an apartment or something. But that affordability problem seems to be, again, coming back and back and back. And how do you address that? I mean, to go to a property owner and say, well, I know you'd like to get $800 a month for this. Would you take $250?
Actually, we have a few programs that do that. And they have to – I mean, they have to have really great relationships with these landlords. We have our Advocates for Veterans Housing Program and our Permanent Supportive Housing Program, Home Plate, where they work directly with these landlords. Like, yes, these clients don't have good credit. Yes, they may have a history, but we're asking you to give them a shot. And that takes a lot of work. I mean, these are case managers and employees who are really trying to get these landlords to understand exactly what, you know, yes, we understand this is a risk, but come on, they're willing to pay rent. We're willing to pay their deposit. Let's do this. It's not always that easy.
And from the school districts, since that is such a big thing, Allison, to keep a child in that school and not have them ping-ponging all over the district because mom and or dad have to move all over the place to try to find some temporary housing somewhere. The school district can't give them a voucher, but what can you do?
I mean, we definitely referral them to, you know, we are kind of, I'm kind of that middle person who can like connect them with people. But I do find that a lot of times it's that initial cost of moving. Nobody has two, like rent plus a deposit plus utility deposit. And a lot of these people are coming from the shelter. They lost everything they had. They don't have beds anymore, washers and dryers or couches or anything like that. So honestly, sometimes thinking about moving into a house that's empty is a little bit scarier than thinking of living at a shelter, you know? So it's not just the monthly cost of living in this affordable housing, but it's like getting into it too, you know? I mean, it's hard to have that extra money sitting aside, especially when you're coming from a homeless situation, to be able to move in and become stable.
Sure. And you mentioned also, both you and Kim, the fact that, you have a bankruptcy on your history. You try to get an apartment.
Right.
You know, it is virtually impossible. And I would suspect that's a factor with some of the clients here that were homeless. First the bankruptcy and then you lose everything and boom, you're out on the street and that follows you for 7 years. And what are you going to do?
Yeah. And you have families that are actually the kids are the ones that are impacted greatly because at that point you're trying to find a place for them to go and they're going out in and out of schools. They're going from one school to another school district. And ultimately for a child at that point, the best thing you can do is give them some sense of stability anywhere. And generally, like, for example, I got to give kudos to Allison. The Leon County school system works hard to try to provide us with transportation when kids are coming in our shelter so they can keep them in the same school. And clearly, where our shelter is located at, the kid could be going into an entirely different part of town, but we're still getting them there. So ultimately, you know, that's what we really need to focus on is how do we give some sense of stability to these kids that are actually impacted by parents, families, things of that nature.
We only have a few seconds left here in this show. Just for a moment, any final thoughts here, Kim, you'd like to throw out?
Yeah, this impacts – like he was saying, this impacts the kids. But we need to remember this is also their future. There's a huge study out there about the achievement gap of children like this. Not only are they not living in a stable environment, but now their test scores, their achievements are going to be lower because of the situation they're in. So helping a family is not just helping them immediately. It's helping the future generations of that family.
Perfect segue to Allison Feinberg.
Yeah, I think that it takes an army. You know, it's going to take everybody in the community to work together towards one goal to make stuff change. And so I encourage everybody in the community to look into this problem and begin to start caring about it.
Takes an army plus the U.S. Marines, I guess.
Yes.
Kevin Priest, what do you think?
You know, I got to reiterate what they've already said. It's one of those things where we've got to work together, and that's the only way the problem it will become or get solved. We need more resources towards this. So,
Kevin Priest with Capital City Youth Services, Allison Feinberg, Leon County Schools, Kim Galbrand, Countryman, Big Bend Homeless Coalition, and all the best to you guys. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Taylor Cox and Lydell Rawls handling the technical chores here today. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Next Thursday, Tallahassee Chief of Police Michael DeLeo. That's coming up next week right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.